Okay, go here and blue this. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 120. Wow, that's a lot. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan. Wow.
For the second time. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, 120.
Dave,
woo.
Yeah, Dave forgot to hit the record the first time around, so oh well.
Man.
At least we're only like 15, 30 seconds in as opposed to like 15 minutes like I've done in the past, so.
That makes me cry a little bit.
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, wait. I actually have that ready. There we go. All right.
You think so, after 120 episodes, we'd be a little more...
on top of it?
That's
yeah,
okay.
Right.
That's all right.
Yeah.
We're just flying by the seat of our pants, as
exactly.
always. Nothing has changed after 120 episodes.
Exactly. So Barry, since you've been gone for a while, had some time off and whatever... Actually, you just missed a week, but...
Just a week, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The summer's just... Time gets all... Timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. Yeah.
Yes.
So true. What have you watched, sir?
I went out of my way to see The City of Your Final Destination. This is the last movie done by the Merchant Ivory guys. These are the guys who did Room with a View and Howard's Inn, my favorite remains of the day. The last film they did because Ismael Merchant passed away during the making of this film. City of Your Final Destination stars Anthony Hopkins, Laura Linney, and Charlotte Gainsbourg. It's about this young man who goes to Uruguay to basically write a book about this family who has this really kind of sinister past. And he basically needs the blessing of the family in order to write the book about them. And the family is kind of this quirky, shut-in group led by Anthony Hopkins, who is, by the way, playing a homosexual for the first time. This is a very good film. It has a lot of the hallmarks of other Merchant Ivory movies. It's visually beautiful. The performances are excellent. The music is gorgeous. The scenery is amazing. It's also kind of dull and talky. I like the film. There's so many good things about it, particularly Charlotte Gainsbourg, who last seen in Antichrist. She is amazing in The City of Your Final Destination. She plays a real vulnerable character, and she's just heartbreaking. Just beautiful performance. Wonderful. I recommend the movie, but I don't think it's one you absolutely have to see, but it's one I'm glad that I saw. I went back.
Sorry, how does it compare to the other Merchant Ivory Wayans movies?
I liked it better than I think their worst movie is Slaves of New York. I think it's better than that. I think it's on par with something like Surviving Picasso. It's a little too long, like a lot of their films, and it's extremely talky. So if you're not in for something like that, it might be a bit of a challenge. But I don't think it's up to Remains of the Day. But I did like it as much as Surviving Picasso. So do you have a favorite?
Great. I haven't seen any of them.
He's just asking for a starting point, you see.
There you go. Yeah, I would start with The Remains of the Day. That's terrific. That's Anthony Hopkins, Emma Thompson, and Christopher Reeve. That's an excellent film. Really, really good. I also went and looked at the Steven Seagal classic, Hard to Kill. And I got to say, this is definitely one of his best movies. There's a scene in it that made me laugh so hard. I just thought, I want to watch this scene on a loop. And you could see it in the trailer too. Steven Seagal is at his best friend's house, and his best friend is this retired cop, and he's going to the cop's house to get like advice about how to take on the bad guys. And Steven Seagal like takes out his gun, and the cop friend has like this flower garden, with all these pots and stuff. And the cop goes, "What are we going to do?" And Steven Seagal's like, "We're going to go in, we're going to clean out." And he goes, "Chick, chick." And he like shoots his cop friend's garden to pieces. It's not his house. It's not his garden. It's his cop friend's garden. But it just shows Steven Seagal can get away with that because he's so cool, but also because he's such a jerk in all of these movies. Anyway, the moment just struck me as so incredibly funny. This is the one that he did with his then wife, Kelly LeBrock, who of course we all know because of Weird Science.
He married Kelly LeBrock?
He was married to Kelly LeBrock. Doesn't that just make him just a little more badass than you previously thought
wow.
he was? He was married to Kelly LeBrock, although I understand it really wasn't a very good marriage. But in any case, he does the movie with LeBrock. She's the love interest, and they're so much fun to watch because he can't act. But he's got such great presence. She can act circles around him, but not that much. So they're so much fun to watch because there's not so much chemistry about them as much as like they're just kind of going through the motions of the action movie. But I enjoyed watching them as a couple. And they're such a good looking couple. And it's weird that they've got this love scene together, but no one takes off a shred of clothing. They kiss, they fondle, they go into bed, and it's cut to the next action sequence, which I thought was kind of let down. But anyway,
is there 90s R&B involved?
Unfortunately, no. No
okay.
roses, no accents. Although Steven Seagal, you never know, he whispers all of his dialogue. So, but no, I liked Hard to Kill. And Robert Sandler, of course, who we all know is the Grim Reaper in the second Bill and Ted movie. He's the bad guy in this one.
A Frank Darabont kind of staple.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, he's a very good bad guy. And he's got this great scene where he gets his teeth knocked out. But anyway, I also saw the Gene Hackman train thriller, Narrow Margin, which is a remake, but a very good remake. It's pretty much top of its field. Like one of the best B thrillers I think I've seen in a while. This is Gene Hackman. He has to protect an archer who witnessed this crime. So they're on a train. There's all these bad guys on the train. They have to get off the train. The bad guys want to kill him. Really suspenseful, really exciting, really well done. Went back and watched one of the few Brett Ratner movies that got good reviews. I watched The Family Man with Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I still don't love this movie. I really don't. But Cage is very good in it. I don't like John Cheadle as the mystical African American who comes and saves Whitey. You know, this is the same role. This is the same freaking role. Like the same year you had Michael Duncan Clark, one of those.
Clark Duncan, yeah.
Thank you. In The Green Mile, essentially playing the same kind of, you know, Uncle Remus role. So it was weird to see, like, Don Cheadle playing, like, the same guy again. But not a bad movie, you know, definitely.
So if they make Song of the South, Don Cheadle needs to be Uncle Remus. Is that what you're saying?
He would be a magical Uncle Remus, I'm sure. Let's see. Chicken Run. Watch Chicken Run. I haven't seen Chicken Run since, like, it came out. Not as funny as I remember, but pretty ingenious, really wonderful, really great visual gags.
Wait, you're watching this have to tie in with the star of the film's recent
escapades.
Misgivings?
Honestly, that was it was honestly a coincidence that I watched it the same day that the news hit. So, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, unfortunately. So we'll get back to that bright spot. Spielberg's Minority Report, which I looked at again. I love this film. I think it gets better every time I see it. One of Spielberg's stronger post Jurassic Park films. Tim Burton's Pee-wee's Big Adventure, still one of the best comedies I've ever seen. Absolutely brilliant, genius. And then the one I just watched this morning, which I think bears talking about because it's such an interesting film, and though it's not a great film, is Taylor Hackford's movie Proof of Life. This is the first movie that Russell Crowe did after Gladiator. It became infamous during filming because, of course, Crowe and his co-star Meg Ryan had an infamous affair during the film. You watch the movie, and it's obvious that the film is aware of the affair between the two stars because it's obvious, and I looked up on it, sure enough, this is the truth. It turns out that there were a bunch of love scenes between the two of them that were cut from the film. And you watch the movie, and their relationship doesn't make any sense. This is the one where Russell Crowe is a hostage negotiator, and Meg Ryan's husband is kidnapped, and then Russell Crowe has to be the one to step in and save the husband and everything. But, you know, it's this illicit relationship between Ryan and Crowe. And because the love scenes are cut, the relationship doesn't make any sense. There's these scenes where they're longing, looking at each other, kind of like Bella and Edward. Can't believe I'm using that comparison.
Wow.
But it's like that. They're kind of like looking at each other, like brooding at each other. And like, why are they doing this? Like, they're having a normal conversation, and then it's lovey-dovey. And then it's business-like, and then it isn't, then it is, then it isn't. And it's so obvious that there are some key scenes kind of illuminating the relationship that should be in there, whether the bedroom scenes or not. The movie needs them. So the film itself is actually quite good. There's some really good acting. Russell Crowe is exceptional in this film. But because the love aspect of it got toned down, I think because the studio or the director got squeamish about what was really going on, there's something really lacking. And hey, Danny Elfman does the music. So
there you go.
Not a bad movie, not a great movie. That's all I saw.
Okay, I'll go next because I got one whole thing. Actually, two, I guess. My love affair with Wipeout continues. That's such a stupid, fun show. Oh, dude, you can't hate on that. Big Balls, come on.
No, I love it. I love it. It's good stuff.
What is this show? I don't know.
You've never seen Wipeout?
No.
Essentially, they take 24 contestants to run through an obstacle course and kill themselves.
Is this like a Japanese game show?
Yeah, kind of. Actually, they film it in Argentina. There's like, they have this gigantic estate where they have 16 different countries' versions of Wipeout that they film simultaneously. And it is, I will show you some after the show if you want. It's pretty flippin' entertaining.
So wait, is this the American version?
Yeah.
This is, okay.
Yeah, it's the American version. And it's just...
And it's equally as violent and unhinged, or?
No, every single thing they go through is like very foam padded. So there's, you know, you don't have chances of people like busting their eye open or something like that. But it's pretty brutal sometimes.
Is this the one where they have to like stand a certain way so they can get through like the foam thing coming at them? Is this the one? Where they, you know.
Oh, like the strike the pose thing, whatever?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
This is actually obstacle courses that they have to go through.
Okay.
And it's just crazy fun. Yeah.
Wipeout. What channel is that on?
ABC. Okay. Tuesday nights, yeah.
Okay.
Not going to mention that show because that's a guilty pleasure, but I have finished the first season of Fringe.
What are you holding back on? No, wait. What's the one you skipped over?
Hell's Kitchen.
Come on.
I'm waiting.
Nothing to be ashamed of.
You're building this up. That was gonna be like The Good Wife or something.
No. I'm waiting for Gordon Ramsay to have an aneurysm on the air.
Well, that's what you're watching. You're waiting for him to like.
That's the only reason it's entertaining, like, because the way he just like.
Waiting for him to like spontaneously combust.
Makes grown men cry. It's a beautiful thing.
That's not a bad show. That's a good show.
Yeah.
And, you're gonna say like Gilmore Girls. I was gonna get really upset here, but
no. But it's reality TV, like game show reality TV, and I'm not a fan of reality TV.
That's one of the better ones though. That's like The Amazing Race. You could stand behind that as long as you didn't say like The Bachelorette, which unfortunately I've had to sit through. So.
I'm sorry. Me too. Then Fringe, first season I'm done with. This show is nuts. Amazingly good nuts.
Oh, good.
Thanks to who?
Thanks to Joshua Jackson.
Yay!
Yeah, actually the entire cast is pretty strong and really enjoyable to watch. And essentially this is like if the X-Files had better characters as far as I'm concerned.
Ah, here we go again.
Oh, No. I like the X-Files. I really do. I didn't like it near the end, but I enjoyed it at the beginning.
Okay.
I think they fleshed the characters more out in Fringe.
Okay.
And instead of hinting at things that could or could not be whatever, blah, 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 they're like, no, this stuff's all real and here it is. And it ends on a hell of a cliffhanger. I loved it. I was like, they keep pushing the edge and pushing the edge and pushing the edge, and then they just kind of go jumping off the cliff in a good way. So I cannot wait to start watching the second season.
Fringe. Yes. Check it out.
Yes. So I saw a movie, but I can't talk about that till next week. So, well. Ethan, I'll let you wrap it up, sir.
Yeah.
Okay. I watched a lot. I watched Pump Up the Volume.
Excellent. Good choice.
Yeah, I thought the first hour or so of this movie was like amazing, like one of the best teen movies I've ever seen. I feel like after that, in the last 45 minutes or so, it kind of peters out a bit with people in a Jeep getting chased by a helicopter and such. But still, that first hour is pretty amazing. And if I had seen this movie when I was like in 10th grade or something, I would have lost my mind over it.
You would have ridden around in a Jeep going, "Talk hard!"
Pretty much.
Although you got to admit, what we do, really, what we're doing right now, isn't that far off from what Hard Harry did 20 years ago.
Well.
Although no one cares what we're doing, but they cared what he did.
And there's no voice modulator or anything, but.
Or is there?
We could try to auto-tune an entire episode sometime.
Do a total show in auto-tune?
Yeah.
Now let's talk about Inception.
Exactly.
So what else did you see, Ethan? Sorry, that was.
I watched White Dog, a film directed by Samuel Fuller. This movie's famous because it was, well, I'd not say it was banned, but it was shelved because it deals with. I'll tell you what it's about first. Basically, this woman, she's driving down Los Angeles, rah, 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 and she hits this dog, and she takes it in. And eventually she finds out the dog is a white dog, a dog trained to attack black people. And basically she takes it to this like animal compound where they train animals for movies. And they have like this black trainer who tries to like cure the dog of its racism. And it's an awesome, awesome movie.
This is a Criterion, like, right?
Yeah, it's on Criterion. And this movie is like, it's typical Samuel Fuller. It's incredibly ridiculous. It has a score by Ennio Morricone, and it's co-written by Curtis Hanson. And there's just these moments in it that are so like hammy and over the top, but so just awesome at the same time. But at the same time, too, it is an incredibly powerful movie, I thought. And I think it's one of the best films I've ever seen about racism. And I think the history behind this movie is that they like showed it to some African-American groups, and one like they thought it was racist, which I cannot understand how anyone would think this movie was racist. But then Paramount, like, they kind of shit their pants over it and they shelved it, and then they like screened it more, but then it didn't get like a full release till like 1991, like 9 years after it was made. So it's an awesome movie. Definitely check it out.
Man, that sounds terrific. I want to see that.
Hey, you might have a chance to pick it up for cheap here pretty soon.
Dun, dun. Well, we'll get there. Okay. Keep going, Ethan.
I watched Robert Downey Sr.'s Greaser's Palace.
Oh, what'd you think of that?
I liked it. It was a pretty interesting movie. I'd like to watch it again, though, because I don't know if I was quite giving it the full attention it deserved. But, yeah, I didn't like it as much as Putney Swope, because I think this movie, Putney Swope is just a flat-out comedy, and this is a bit, is kind of, I wouldn't say it takes itself seriously completely, but I feel like it maybe has a little more on its mind, and I just wasn't in the right mood to watch it. I don't know, but I did really appreciate it and think it was very interesting. Let's see, next I watched The Losers, which I actually enjoyed. It's pretty interesting that this is actually the exact same movie as The A-Team. Like, I'm not even kidding. The exact same movie. Like, the plot structure is identical. Like, some of the set pieces are identical. Some of the characters are almost identical. It's like, it's insane. But I enjoyed The A-Team, and I enjoyed this. I'd say it's definitely worth watching for Chris Evans. He's awesome in it. He's like the Charlton Copley of this movie.
Wow.
And the plot pretty much makes no sense. Like, I at no point ever understood why they were doing certain things, like what this was achieving for that. But you kind of don't care because it's just fun and you get into it. And though I will say Jason Patrick in this movie is brutal. Like, he tries so hard to be funny, but it would have been better if he was like Jason Patrick, the straight man doing comedy. But he's trying just too hard. Nah, but the rest of the cast, awesome. Dad from Supernatural is good in it.
How's Zoe?
She's good in it, I thought. I'd actually recommend it.
Cool. All right. You're
next,
the first.
I finally saw World's Greatest Dad.
Oh, nice. Which, I like that film.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, too. I was actually kind of surprised just how dramatic it actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is almost like a true, like, kind of Billy Wilder-esque movie, as I've heard it be described. And I really appreciate also how dark it was, really willing to be and uncompromising. And that the son character in the movie is like is just one of the worst characters ever. But at the same time, I actually thought there was a lot of humanity to him, and that kind of gave the movie the right feeling. It wasn't too much of a cartoon and not too much of a drama. And yeah, I thought Robin Williams was amazing in it. So
yeah. Love that swimming pool scene at the end. I think that's one of the best endings that I've seen on a movie.
Yeah,
plus score to
under,
the Queen song.
The Under Pressure.
Yeah.
Well, and it tied in with the thing earlier in the movie too. So
yep.
That was, yeah. And this morning I watched Todd Solondz's new film, Life During Wartime. I will say I liked this movie, but maybe I should have watched it a few days ago, just because I need it to sink in a bit more. I feel like I really talk about it, but I did like it, and I thought the kind of different casting worked well. Like, Allison Janney, I thought, brought a lot to the role that wasn't in the original, and well, Ciarán Hinds plays the Dylan Baker role, and it's like Dylan Baker is amazing in Happiness, but Ciarán Hinds is great in this film too, but he does something like completely different. And Paul Reubens does the John Lovitz role from the original.
Oh, wow.
And he was really good in it too. And this movie, it's kind of, I'd say it's thematically, it's a bit more optimistic than Happiness, because this movie's about forgiveness and forgetting, but it still is very grim, a grim film. And again, I just need it to sink in a little more before I really know what I thought of it. So I would recommend it, though.
Would you say that we need to go see Happiness before this one?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like, okay. It's not like it's impossible to follow or anything, but I'd just say you'd get a little more out of it, I think. And finally, I watched the entire series of Undeclared.
Oh, wow.
This is the
Fox show.
Judd Apatow show. You were going to say
something? I just said it's the Fox show, yeah.
Well, yeah, Fox. This show is, it's from Judd Apatow. You know, everyone knows who he is. And it has a lot of the same creative team as Freaks and Geeks. And at first I was expecting this to basically just be Freaks and Geeks in college, but I'd say it's a bit more cartoonish and some of the characters are more caricatures. But the thing is, I think that's intended, because I heard something where Judd Apatow was talking about how often the fun you have in college is the reward you have for all the pain you go through in high school. I think that's the point he's trying to make with the show, is saying, I'm going to make a bit more of a sitcom with the college show, or the high school show is more of a drama. So, but towards the end, it really hits its stride, and it finds its heart. And it's actually pretty crazy how many recognizable names there are in this show. Like, Jay Baruchel and Seth Rogen are part of the main cast, and Jay Jason Segel's in a bunch of episodes, and he's awesome in it. And so yeah, the people, there's like Amy Poehler, Jenna Fisher, Will Ferrell's in an episode, Ben Stiller's in an episode, Adam Sandler appears as himself in one episode. So it's wow. it's pretty crazy.
Nice.
And a lot of the same, Greg Mottola directed a bunch of episodes. He did Superbad Adventureland. And Jon Favreau even directed the last episode of the series. So,
nice.
Yeah, I'd recommend it.
By the way, Ethan, before we wrap it up, I definitely want to say thank you for recommending The Messenger. I did get around to seeing that. That was a very, very tough
movie. It's in
movie.
My queue. I'm watching it
That's
this week.
That's an exceptional film. I was pretty blown away by it. It's a movie that I didn't really know where it was going. I just knew the general concept of it, but I'm really grateful I stuck with it. It was tough, really tough to sit through at times, and it's funny how even though it's not a war film per se, it affected me more than most, if not all, of the other films dealing with the same subject matter. And Woody Harrelson, just extraordinary. Ben Foster, amazing. Yeah, thank you for recommending that. That was an excellent film.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Barry.
Did you have anything else, sir?
No.
Okay, I spaced one last thing. I keep forgetting that I keep watching Futurama every week because I forget it comes back.
We should just take it as a given that you're always watching Futurama.
This is true.
Some way, shape, or form.
This is true. And this episode, Bender and Amy end up falling in love and getting it on and
really?
Wanting to support robosexual marriage, which is marriage between robots and humans. And it is just so out there. It's so much fun. It has one of the greatest lines ever. You know the funky robot cop?
Yeah.
He does a Vulcan neck pinch on a convict who's trying to escape and then says,
"Mama says Spock, you out."
That just made me so very happy. So I just had to get that out of the way too, because you know I'm enjoying the show more and more. It seems like they're really hitting their stride. Yeah, good
very
times.
Cool.
So let's talk about what hit theaters this weekend.
Well, this week I believe it's the number one movie in America. I haven't checked the final numbers, but
it is.
Oh, it is? Okay. Despicable Me, voiced with Steve Carell and a number of other talented people wasting their time. I think not that far behind, though, is Predators.
Actually,
Yay!
Twilight took second.
Ah, son of a... All right, limited release. You got The Kids Who Are All Right with Julian Moore, Mark Ruffalo, and Annette Bening. Supposed to be a very good film. Wreck 2, which needs no introduction. The Girl Who Played with Fire, the sequel to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Supposed to be pretty sweet, and that's really it.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you see Predators?
I saw Despicable Me and Predators, yeah.
Did you see anything from this week, Ethan?
No.
Okay, so give us the rundown, sir. You are contrary to apparently popular opinion on one of these movies.
Despicable Me, I did not like. I think it's one of those subpar CGI family comedies. Steve, you know, you've heard my review. Steve Carell, yeah. Like his decision to do his character Gru in a Russian accent, I thought that was a big mistake. You've got a lot of talented people, like, let's see, I think Will Arnett's one of the voices.
Jason Segel,
Julie Andrews. I mean, a lot of really talented people wasting their time. These are the characters that, like, you don't need famous people to do these characters, and nothing they do makes it stand out. It's one of these cases, once again, that you don't need a famous voice to do, you know, you need someone who conveys the voice, you know, which is, of course, the Pixar model, which, of course, they're not following here. The only thing about Despicable Me that I genuinely liked is the 3D. It looks really good. There's a scene on a roller coaster that's pretty amazing. It looks really great in 3D. The movie really does utilize the 3D technique so much more than Toy Story 3 does, and that's the one thing it has over Toy Story 3. Otherwise, this movie is so disposable. Not despicable, just disposable. Yeah, so not...
Disposable me!
Disposable. Yeah. Instant review. Predators. Predators was a nice surprise. I'd say lower your expectations because some of the reviews have been so good. I'm like, need to like take it down a few notches. It's a lot of fun. It uses the exact same music as the original, the Alan Silvestri score from the original, which is so great. It is a direct sequel to the first movie. It acknowledges the first movie, moves on from there. You know who you are if you know that, you know, Derek Myers, who played Jason in the last Friday the 13th movie, he in the end credits, he's listed as classic Predator. If that gets you excited, you know who you are. This movie's definitely for you. I got to say, I never thought I'd live in a world where I'd ever see a movie where the Predator gets his ass handed to him by Adrian Brody, but this is that movie. And Brody,
did you believe it, though? That's
I
the
did.
Question. Really?
I did. That's the thing. Like, Brody, like, he uses this gruff Bale-esque voice that's not gonna fool anybody. But he clearly hit the gym, and during his scene where he goes manu-a-manu with the Predator, I mean, he's pretty fierce. I was pretty impressed.
Cool. Danny Trejo?
Danny Trejo is pretty wonderful, as always, because he's Danny Trejo, you know, and he plays himself quite well. Yeah, it's a fun movie. It doesn't quite top its first hour, and the midsection is a little bit too much talk, but the ending for me really pulled it off. It really is what I wanted from a Predator movie. They set it up for a sequel. I hope they keep going. I think this is a really good track for this series, and it was nice that it was a hard R. It wasn't AVP or AVPR. But anyway, yeah, Predators is a lot of fun.
Sweet. Cool. All right, let's talk about what's hitting DVD this week.
This week on DVD. Boy, did this one look bad. An actor I really liked who, I don't know why he's doing these garbage movies that are making money somehow. Gerard Butler, coming off of The Ugly Truth. Gerard Butler and Jennifer Aniston in The Bounty Hunter.
That's I should use that clip now, but I'm going to save it for after the episode. Because okay. That sounds a good place to use it.
Mystery Science Theater 3018.
Yes.
Chloe, boy, is this going to be popular. Chloe did not do well in theaters, but man, it's going to be huge.
I read the synopsis, and I'm like, this looks so bad.
This is the Amanda Seyfried Gets Naked movie. This is directed by a brilliant, brilliant Canadian director, Adam Egoyan. This is the guy who gave us The Sweet Hereafter, and one of my favorite serial killer thrillers, Felicia's Journey with Bob Hoskins. Terrific movie if you haven't seen it. But Egoyan apparently made this erotic thriller called Chloe with Liam Neeson and Julianne Moore and Amanda Seyfried.
So you're actually excited to see it? Or?
I will see it because it's Egoyan. But, you know, that's okay. The same excuse I use for Showgirls. I'm like, hey, it's Verhoeven. I have to see it, right? So, but yeah, I will definitely see Chloe because, you know, it's a brilliant director. So, Our Family Wedding, which looked like crap and was in theaters for about a weekend back in January. Greenberg, the new film by Noah Baumbach. I know some critics who love this movie. I'm not one of them. I did not like this film. Ben Stiller is very good in the movie. His co-star...
Greta Gerwig.
Thank you. It slipped my mind for a second. She is exceptional in this film, but the main character I thought was completely unlikable, and I thought the movie kind of followed suit, even though it's a very well-made film.
So we've got two different points of view on this one.
You like this one, Ethan?
Yeah, it's my favorite movie of the year so far.
Really? Why?
Like I said before in last week's episode, there's something in every Noah Baumbach movie I really relate to. And this movie, I related to the main character in a way, not completely, but I didn't find him actually that unlikable. Like I read some reviews that said he was a monster. I'm like, he's not that unlikable of a character. He's an interesting guy who's just frustrated. And I know people like that in real life, and I'm a bit like that in real life. And I thought it was a powerful film. Very funny too. That cocaine scene, amazing.
That was one scene. I would agree with the monster analogy. I mean, he wasn't Patrick Bateman, but I thought he was a pretty horrible person. If they called this movie Despicable Me, I think that would have been very fitting.
Well, yeah, but at least he's an interesting character for a movie. You know, you want to follow him because I was invested in his struggle.
It's all good. I like having
different
points of view.
I'm sorry it's not Russell Crowe wearing a girdle for 2.5 hours, okay?
Well played.
You know, I liked his second film, Margot at the Wedding, and you know, Nicole Kidman's character was also kind of despicable, but for whatever reason, I connected with her, but I did not connect with Stiller's character. I loved Gerwig's character so much. I felt so protective of her, and when he kept stepping on her, it broke my heart, and I just thought the movie was so mean-spirited. But maybe I need to see it again. Nah, just kidding. I'm not going to see it again. All right, what else we got? Insomnia, the remake of Insomnia, directed by Christopher Nolan with Robin Williams and Al Pacino and Hilary Swank, available on Blu-ray. That's going to be a good Blu-ray.
I'm sure. I haven't seen it, but if they do it well.
Have you seen it? Or?
No.
It's a good film. It's very good. St. John of Las Vegas. Dave and I saw this at the Denver Film Festival. That is with Steve Buscemi and Sarah Silverman.
Yes, good times. Interesting
film. Yeah, not a great movie, but worth seeing, especially if you like Buscemi. He's very good in the film. And then also available on Blu-ray, I haven't seen this yet, to my shame, In Bruges, the film that won Colin Farrell Golden Globe for Best Actor.
There we go. All right. Well, should we move on to some news?
Let's
start off with the Machete trailer, because I'm sure we've all watched it.
I'm so torn. I don't know what I want to see more now, The Expendables or Machete, but like they're both movies that if I were 13 years old, I would be already camped out in front of the theater waiting.
The only thing that kills my excitement for The Expendables is at the end of the trailer when it's like that song. It's like, everyone, it's an expendable! that part just is like, oh, geez. But the rest,
Is that from the official Expendables soundtrack, or is that just some song they found?
I don't know, but it makes me worried either way.
Yeah, that actually is a good cause for worry. Because I heard that song too, and I thought, shoot, is Frank Stallone like recording music again?
Wow.
As long as it's good, it's over the top, then.
Yes.
I think I like the Cinco de Mayo trailer better. But this was still a pretty interesting trailer. I totally forgot that Steven Seagal was in this. It just looks so cheesy. The interesting thing was the complete lack of mention of Lindsay Lohan being in it.
Which might not be a bad idea. You know, there's nothing like a good surprise of having somebody. There's so many surprise faces in the trailer.
But
she was
mentioned in the first trailer, in the Red
she
Band
is,
internet.
And her name is on the trailer, the official trailer. But the fact they're not showing her might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, true.
They got enough people to like draw in lots of different audiences for this movie. I don't think they have to worry about like the one Lindsay Lohan fan, like the one Mean Girls fan. They're like, okay, I'll go see.
The one holdover from the train wreck.
Right.
The world's only 20-something cougar, yeah. Mm. Yeah, okay.
We'll talk about that in news in a second.
Well, we're in news. Do you want to just do it? We don't need to talk about it if you really don't want to.
No, we should talk about Miss Lohan. I mean, this is entertainment news. I mean, it's I'm hoping she pulls a Drew Barrymore and is able to completely turn her whole career around. But let's face it, those are rare in this business. But yeah, apparently she's facing 90 days of prison time.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a long time.
What did you say great?
Yeah, great.
And I'm not, and you know, this is tough because I'm not saying she doesn't deserve it. I'm just, it's terrible that this has happened. Speaking of terrible things that have happened, let's just get this out of the way because this is awful. But my gosh, the Mel Gibson thing, what the heck is going on? I'm watching Chicken Run. I'm going online looking at what's Mel Gibson up to? Oh, that's what he's up to. Couldn't believe it.
I haven't been watching the news with this. I honestly don't know what's been going on.
Oh God, I got to tell you.
Was another racist filled lament towards?
Yes, they apparently, and please, Ethan, correct me if I don't get some of the details right here, but apparently they recorded an argument he had with his wife, I think? His wife?
His girlfriend.
His ex-girlfriend. Okay. Definitely his ex now. But yeah, apparently he uses the C word, the B word, the N word, and a few other choice words. And they've got it all recorded. And right after, not long after this hit the internet, apparently totally blew up. But the William Morris agency dropped him as a client, which is a big deal because his old agent died who had been representing him for over 30 years. And so the William Morris agency said, well, we were just holding on to him because your agent was a friend of ours. So now Gibson was without an agent. Of course, you know, my big concern, the big concern is what's going to happen to Jodie Foster's The Beaver. That's what I'm deadly concerned about. Yeah. And notice that I was very careful to word that. I didn't say what happened to Jodie Foster's Beaver. No, because I don't want an unfortunate soundbite myself.
Or the Beaver.
The Beaver.
Wow!
I just watched.
Yeah, that's right. They're gonna actually replace him with Justin Bieber, so it's all good.
Be digitally replaced. It'd be the Bieber.
And
yep.
I was gonna say the thing about this is I I'm not surprised to be honest. I think a lot of Gibson's I think Gibson is a repulsive human being, and I think that fully comes out in his films he's directed. To be honest. Like, I think Apocalypto and Passion of the Christ and Braveheart are proof that this guy needs mental help.
I wouldn't go that far. Because, I mean, if it turns out Martin Scorsese had a similar thing, would you say, wow, let's look at Goodfellas, Casinos? Clearly this guy has bats in his belfry. I mean, I don't want to use his art against him.
Here's why, though, what the difference between those movies. Goodfellas and Casino have gritty violence in a gritty setting. Braveheart and all those other movies, they have slasher movie violence in a historical movie setting. So whenever I watch these movies, I just feel like Mel Gibson's like looking through skips. He's like, okay, this one's a history drama. I can have people cut head offs. And he probably masturbates to it behind, you know.
Wow. All right, then.
I got to disagree with you completely. I mean, this is extremely arguable, but I mean, for Pete's sake, the opening scene of Goodfellas would not be out of place in a slasher movie. And the scene in Casino where the guy gets his head in his vice, where his eyes pop out, that would also not be out of place in Saw 6.
Well, but I don't think Martin Scorsese is like enjoying that when he films that. I just get the impression that Gibson is a little, he's kind of enjoying it. That's more my
and
problem.
And where is this based from? From the South
because
Park episode?
Throughout all of his movies, like Goodfellas and Casino, those both have very violent individual scenes. But those, they're like in spades. Like those movies Gibson has directed are throughout his movies.
There wasn't one scene of violence in The Man Without a Face.
That is true. I will give you that one.
So you bring up a very good point, Barry. We're going to see more Mel Gibson in South Park.
Oh, no question. I'm sure Trey Parker and Matt Stone are like, sweet. They're like high-fiving each other right now. Like, we got a season. So, or at least a special episode. So,
yes.
Yeah. All right. No, this ticks me off because, I'm only going to argue with Ethan to a point. I think, you know, Gibson is either out of his mind or completely ridiculously awfully out of line here. But I've always admired him as an actor. I think he's very talented. I think even Edge of Darkness was proof of that. Not a great movie, but I thought he was terrific in it. I was really hoping for a comeback. This is a killer. This is really a killer. I don't know how he can survive this. I don't know how the Beaver can survive this now.
Yes.
Poor Jodie Foster.
Yeah. So I want to hold off on the big one that I know we all want to talk about until the end.
Okay.
Until near the end. I'll leave the sale news for the very end. But let's see here. Do we want to talk about... Did anyone else watch the House That Drips Blood on Alex trailer?
No.
You didn't? Okay. It's a 30-second trailer... Essentially, with blood dripping down on Tommy Wiseau, on a topless Tommy Wiseau, going.
What?
Yeah. Do you want me to pause it and get it for you?
Is it that important?
Okay. All right. Hang on. We'll be right back. So now that we've watched that odd.
I can't believe we stopped the show.
It's
to
like
watch
performance
that.
Art or something, really.
Well.
Okay, it's performance.
It was
I don't
something.
Know. Ethan couldn't stop laughing while he watched it. Seriously, it's just blood getting poured on Tommy Wiseau. Like.
So it's a real trailer for a real movie?
It's a short film they're going to be showing on Comedy Central.
Short film, okay.
Which still, I mean, it looks better than The Neighbors.
Well, most of them too.
That just make your week already, Ethan?
Pretty much.
Do enough people know who this guy is now? I mean, is the Comedy Central audience that savvy that they all know about The Room?
You know, I mean...
He was on Tim and Eric, so...
Oh, okay, I'm sure that'll... Yeah.
And, like, Bill Simmons, like, a big sports writer over ESPN, has talked about Wiseau in the past and stuff,
oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, so it's starting to...
Oh, yeah.
The fire is starting to burn. Crazy.
If only it would. Wow. All right, anyone else got any other news before we get to the big one?
Let's see. Well...
You want to get some stuff off your chest, I know.
Yeah, I saw the Let Me In trailer, and I was really disappointed.
Really?
Yeah, I was pretty annoyed. I can't believe...
Was it just because it was essentially a shot for shot?
Yeah, looks like they're Xeroxing the original. I don't care how cool the music is. I'm sick of Chloe Moretz, and I wish they were making this movie. It just annoys me so much that we got to sit through it. The CGI effect looks so phony. And
like the cats look real realistic.
Well, speaking of vampires, did you guys see the Vampires Suck trailer?
I missed this one.
Unfortunately, I did. And I'm even less proud of myself that I actually did kind of chuckle at one joke.
Well, I didn't watch the entire thing. I tried watching it, got about 30 seconds into it, and I said, okay, I'll watch this, but I have to be like surfing the internet. So I opened up another browser, I listened to it, and I was like, no, and I just clicked it off. It was like, ugh.
There was a scene where they're ripping off Twilight where you have all the shirtless vampire, the shirtless werewolf boys in just jeans dancing to It's Raining Men. That was like the one thing that kind of made
that's great. That's like that joke. That is great.
It made great me kind of laugh. It kind of made me laugh a little bit, but I'm like, you know, other than that, I'm like, I feel dirty for having laughed at anything in this trailer because,
this movie looks like it's made for 4-year-olds.
Well, like, it is Freeburg and Seltzer. I mean, come on now.
Like usually they're at least aiming at 9-year-olds. It looks like they've officially sunk to 4-year-olds.
Yeah, I.
So wait, this really is Friedberg and Seltzer?
Yes. Oh, yes, okay. It's their next movie.
Okay, I haven't seen the trailer.
I mean, these are the guys who make Uwe Boll look like a legitimate auteur.
The thing is, in this trailer, I don't see any actual jokes in this trailer. Like, at least in the jokes, trailers for their movies, they just had people dressed as other characters from movies farting or getting hit by a car. And that's not funny at all, but at least that's kind of a joke in a way. How is just like saying Jersey Shore? How is that a joke?
You're probably not going to see any real jokes in the movie either, Ethan.
No. The Twilight for Guys video was funny, especially compared to this. Which I don't know if you saw that one.
No.
Oh, I figured you'd watch this one, Ethan. It's where all the characters from Twilight are all girls in lingerie and they're all lesbians.
Oh.
And they like go to like, you know, the whole like audience coming out of the theater that shots. And every single guy's like, this is the best movie ever.
Is this like on Funny or Die?
Yeah, it's one of those kind of trailers.
FunnyOrDie.com. That's a good
one. Well, it's on YouTube for sure. I'm not sure if it's on Funny or Die. But it, I mean, you have a guy walk, because I was like, this is like the girls' Shawshank Redemption. It was directed by Michael Bay. You know, it just.
Because yeah. I saw the quote-unquote Twilight butt sex thing you wanted well, me to yeah, look at yeah, online. Yeah, that, yeah. That was hysterical. I enjoyed that. But no, it's funny that they can't even get to that level. I mean, like, clearly these guys don't understand, like, how to approach this as comedy. They don't understand how these things could be funny.
Like, I'm pretty sure these guys would kill a party dead in its tracks. Because they think they're hilarious, I'm sure.
Well, I think this is just how they beat a party. Lady Gaga, Jersey Shore, Alice in Wonderland, Twilight. That's funny, right? Because I said it? Hmm.
Yeah. You've proven my point for me, sir. I appreciate that.
Right there. That's a seltzer movie. No?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. What else? Do you want to talk about anything else, sir?
There's a few things I want to run by really quick. Avatar, the special edition, is going to be in theaters this August with 8 minutes, including the infamous love scene that was cut from the film.
Nice.
I never showed you that scene that I found on YouTube, did I?
You
yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Way too much stuff on YouTube.
Yes,
you
I
want
did.
To show me?
Yes, I did. I did show you that, and you were pretty disturbed by it. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Is the animated one with the scene? Never mind.
I can't remember. Yeah. Maybe okay. That's a good thing. I blocked
yeah.
it out.
Yeah.
A movie I was really looking forward to seeing, but now I'm not so sure. Matt Damon and Emily Blunt in The Adjustment Bureau pushed back to March. It's supposed to come out like next week. It's been pushed out till March.
They green zoned it.
Ooh. Yeah. What is happening to your career, Mr. Damon? Whose career, Dave?
Oh, dude. See, I wasn't prepared.
Episodes.
I know.
120 episodes. Okay, well, I'll go back to it.
Okay.
It's too late.
I just
late,
wasn't
man.
Ready for it, man. As soon as I heard Green Zone, I should have been ready.
All right. Sorry. I don't even know why we're beating that to death still, because we're shameless. The Tree of Life.
Okay.
Terrence Malick's Tree of Life has officially been rated PG-13. This is exciting. When is it going to be?
Because it might actually come out.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know when, but at least it's PG-13. At least we know that. So.
Okay, I want no like if this is like I want no more excuses on this movie. It has to show at a film festival. Like I'm tired of hearing like he's not done yet. No, show the movie. It's done. Show it now. I'm tired. Like
Denver's coming up. We can hope.
Yes. Oh, I would love for it to be at the Denver Film Festival. Seems kind of a long shot, but yeah, you never know. You never know. Because I know, you know, as we've talked about before, that he wants to release one part of it, and then the second part is going to be IMAX, and that's going to be with dinosaurs and all this stuff. So this could be huge. But, you know, with Tron coming out, are there going to be enough screens for it?
Well, yeah, that's true.
So
yeah,
I don't know. I'm hoping it's worth the wait. I would hate for this to be, you know, like... Lady in the Water. The last news story I want to run by before we get to the huge, huge one, which, of course, is the one that everyone's waiting for. I got to point this out because Twilight Zone, my all-time favorite TV show.
This is sad.
The Sci-Fi Channel, or SIFI, the Syphilis Channel, has dropped it for the first time this year. There was no 4th of July Twilight Zone marathon. Instead, they had a marathon of The Greatest American Hero. No.
That.
Now, look, we've shown our love for that program and for Mr. Cat on this show. You know, no question, Greatest American Hero is a great show, but it's not the Twilight Zone. And how dare they not show the Twilight Zone on the 4th of July? People look forward to that. I certainly look forward to that. I can't believe it wasn't on this year. They say they're still going to have it on for the New Year's Eve, and maybe that'll be the one time they do it. But this is a...
I'd rather have it on 4th of July, though.
It's a tradition. And, you know, people watch it every stinking year. They've been doing this for a long time now. I mean, that would be like the Christmas Story marathon all of a sudden disappearing from TNT. Maybe not. People who hate that movie obviously would be glad for that to be gone. But people who love it and want to watch it every year and can turn on TNT at any time in December and watch it, you know, they look forward to that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Dang. Have you got anything else before we get to it? Ethan, have you got anything else at all?
What is it again?
It's something about a Marvel franchise.
Okay, I have nothing else then.
Okay, hang on here then. Let's go ahead and jump right on into this thing. Just kidding. Actually, we've got one more story to do. I've totally spaced talking about this for the past few weeks, but you mentioned Twilight Zone. It sparked it. The first season of Twilight Zone is coming to Blu-ray. Unfortunately, the MSRP is like $70, so I'll be waiting until it drops. But here's the cool thing. It's got... almost all the original features from the original, the definitive release, which has got commentaries from, let's see here, Earl Holliman, Martin Landau, Rod Taylor, Martin Milner, Kevin McCarthy, and CBS exec William Self.
Wow.
Audio recollections from Burgess Meredith and Anne Francis. All kinds of crazy stuff. But here's the even better thing. First of all, they're all being remastered in Blu-ray from the original negatives. And Here are some of the exclusive features. The never-before-released unofficial Twilight Zone pilot, The Time Element.
That's a good one. I've seen that.
Written by Rod Serling, yeah. Let's see, 19 new commentaries, which is just nuts. Let's see, who's done a bunch of these? There was one name in here that just kind of blew my mind. I forget. There's a bunch of them. More interviews, Tales of Tomorrow episode called What You Need, an audio interview with one of the directors of photography, the 1977 syndication promos for a couple of the episodes, 18 radio dramas, and 34 isolated music scores. So,
that's
holy
amazing.
Crap, that's a lot of stuff.
I want to say that I'm really excited about that, because you mentioned The Time Element, the pilot episode. I saw it at the 2007 Twilight Zone convention in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And the version I saw, I mean, they had to like get a projector out, and it was pretty beaten to heck. So I'm really looking forward to like seeing that crystal clear with some clarity. And
yeah, I'm figuring once it hits about $40, I'll get it. But right now, I mean, it's like $75
to
pre-order.
That's
so
steep, but yeah, if you're a fan, that sounds pretty definitive.
All right, let's get to the big one. Apparently, Edward Norton's out as the Hulk in the Avengers, but they're still going to have the Hulk.
That's really disappointing.
I don't get this. I'm essentially the everyone's thinking that either he wanted too much money or that Marvel just doesn't want to put up with him.
Yeah, because I know apparently they had a lot of problems with the Louis Leterrier film.
Well, no, but Louis Leterrier was on board with Norton on a lot of the stuff that they wanted to keep. So
yeah, well, that's what I mean. I mean, I think, you know, obviously that was not a good collaboration, and there was a lot of arguing over the final cut of the film, and apparently that's...
What do you think about this, Ethan?
Well, the thing that to think about this here is, how much is Bruce Banner going to be in the movie?
And that's the thing. He probably won't be in it a whole heck of a lot, so what's the big deal getting rid of him?
So, yeah, who cares?
Well, now there will be times... I mean, there are times... I would love to see him and Robert Downey Jr. on screen at the same time, doing their respective characters. You know, they're going to do tests on Banner to figure out what's going on with the Hulk. And I could see Banner correcting, you know, Tony Stark on stuff and pissing Tony off. And, just fun little Banner stuff like that could really flesh out things, especially if Whedon is actually writing the script, that I don't see a lot of other actors really being able to pull it off that well. Especially if you're going to cast some unknown out of nowhere now.
Yeah, I like Bruce Banner as a character, and I really liked what Norton brought to him. I loved what Eric Bana did to him, but that's obviously never going to happen ever again.
Well, and Eric Bana, I think, was the beginning of Bruce Banner, and Edward Norton was, you know, Bruce Banner down the road. And I think they both played different aspects of him quite well.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, you know, Iron Man, for me, is all about Tony Stark. I love the character so much that it's more interesting when he's not in the suit, even though when he's in the suit, it's pretty terrific. Same with Bruce Banner. I want to see who he is, his conflicts, his, what he's going through, his mental state. And I thought that Norton was wonderful in portraying that. And I think it's a real, real loss in dropping him. And, you know, apparently at Comic-Con, they're going to release a new name. So, I mean, I'm sure they'll pick some great fanboy name out of a hat and nobody fine, but it just makes the last Hulk movie seem completely pointless if they're, you know, if they...
And I would say I liked it better than Iron Man 2.
Me too. Thank you. Me too. I like The Incredible Hulk. And I you know, because I thought it was a really good movie, I think they should have kept going with him. And likewise, I mean, I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. I was excited about seeing Robert Downey Jr. and Edward Norton and Scarlett Johansson and Don Cheadle and Samuel L. Jackson all in the same movie.
Yeah. I'm not excited about the Avengers movie. I'll just say it. Captain America may be kind of cool. I've said before how much I hate and despise Thor. It's going to take a lot for me to actually see that in the theater, I think.
Thor and Captain America have a lot to live up to. I mean, for me, Thor, I'm really skeptical about, just because I don't know how they can make that character work, even though Kenneth Branagh is directing that. I totally respect him. And Captain America, great character. I cannot see Chris Evans doing that, so...
Well, and I love Joss Whedon to death. I mean, even the stuff that I don't like of his, I still respect him as an artist.
He's a great writer.
I don't see him pulling off an Avengers movie, because there isn't that human chemistry that you have with the X-Men stuff. And that's what he really thrives in, is character building and stuff, and that's just not the Avengers. It's essentially a Marvel team-up every single issue. I mean, that's all that the Avengers really is good for. And so I'm highly skeptical about how the Avengers movie is going to turn out.
Yeah. Me too. At this point, honestly, I was really counting on Norton and Downey Jr. doing it. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, Paramount's putting this out, right?
Is it Paramount?
Well, Marvel's making it, but Paramount may be distributing it.
Well, Paramount is owned by Viacom, who I'm pretty sure put the money towards distributing nuclear weapons. So I'm boycotting this movie.
Okay. Wow.
Oh, there you go.
Wow. And having watched Get Smart over the weekend, nuclear. What? Sorry, nothing. The final bit of news is actually for all you deal shoppers out there, starting on the 13th, so this Tuesday, Barnes & Noble, if you have one around you, is going to be running a 50% off sale on all their Criterions, Blu-ray and DVD, which means you can pick up some of those gorgeous Criterion Blu-rays for like $20.
Gee.
If you find the right coupons, you can even get $5 off extra in the store.
Where can we find the right coupon, Dave?
I'll put up a link up when I post the show, but it's over at DVDtalk.com. That's okay. Where I always check their forums to find stuff.
Sweet.
That's where, and if you... Seriously, if you want deals, you need to follow us on Facebook, because I posted a link earlier this week about how you could pick up Planet Earth, the Blu-ray BBC edition, the Attenborough version, for $13.
13, shipped. Wow.
So, yeah, you should totally follow it, because a lot of stuff I come across is like pretty much that day and that day only. Like, that one died because Slick Deals got a hold of it, and you have people who buy hundreds of copies just trying to flip them on eBay. So, yeah, but you should follow us on Facebook. It's under Screen Geeks Radio. Good times. If that's it, let's go ahead and take a quick break, brought to our good friends from Jonja, and we will be right back with some fun goodness.
Thanks, Dave. Great show. At Jonja.net, that's Jonja, we have everything to satisfy your sci-fi fan needs. If you look at this chart comparing... What do you mean there's no video? They're screen geeks. They don't have a screen? Well, how am I supposed to... I hired a Cylon to tell everyone about the discussions of sci-fi television movies past and present. I guess I won't be needing you. You can leave.
By your command.
I mean, come on, I had Nichelle Nichols beam in to talk about our long list of exclusive interviews, including Zachary Quinto, Amanda Tapping, and the crew of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Hailing frequencies are always open at JeanJay.net.
Never mind, Miss Nichols. Thanks for coming in. I don't believe this. Oh, great. Now here comes my special guest to tell people about Jonja.net's Flash Arcade. Forget it, man. They can't even see you. Oh, well. Maybe everyone will find their way over to Jonja.net to see and hear everything for themselves. Thanks for listening. Now back to Screen Geeks.
That's a major accomplishment after 35 years of being a failed filmmaker. Lloyd Kaufman gets to be on ScreenGeeks.com.
And we're back after that snarky ad and the sarcastic tribute to our show from Lloyd Kaufman. Nice.
Good times. We might be getting to talk to Lloyd again later.
Maybe. He'll be out in October. Yeah, we'll see.
Yes.
We're going to be looking at listening to that ad screen.
Should I break down the little difference in how we're doing this, or do you want to talk about who we're doing first?
Yeah, please do that.
So due to listener suggestions, we're going to try to experiment a little bit with the director series thing. Instead of doing like an episode, a movie for four episodes, we're actually going to take a director, talk about three or four of their most well-known films, one episode, and do three or four of their lesser-known but still great films in the next episode. So who are we starting off with, sir?
Starting off with Sir Alfred Hitchcock, one of the greatest directors who ever lived.
It's really easy to pick three or four movies because his work is very well-known.
Yeah, in fact, like even as I look at this list, I'm like, oh, we're leaving out this one and this one and this one. There's just too many
good ones. We can chime in with those a little bit if we want to, but... Yeah. But there were like four of them we wanted to talk to. I want to start off with your favorite movie.
Okay, yeah, well, that's easy. We'll talk about Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. This is my favorite film. Gosh, where to even begin? I've taught so many classes on this, and I don't want to just like kick into my teacher overdrive. If you haven't seen this film, if you have not seen Psycho, then I'm just going to lay it out right here. Definitely wait to listen to the rest of this episode. Not because we don't want you to listen, but because I don't want to ruin it for you. This movie is that good. It does have a plot twist that is so dynamic that we are going to have to discuss the film. But if you haven't seen Psycho, do wait till you listen to the rest of this podcast, because it's worth the wait, I think. But yeah, this is the story about a woman played by Janet Leigh who steals a great deal of money to run off with her boyfriend. She is on this long, long road trip on a dark and stormy night, and she happens to stay check into a hotel run by a very nice young man and his very shrewish mother, and some very bad things happen, and it turns out the house is haunted in more ways than one, and that's the setup for Psycho. I freaking love this movie. It's based on Robert Bloch's novel. Maybe we should be specific about where to go with it here, because I could just go on teacher overdrive.
Just vaguely
here.
Talking about how it is. First of all, I'm guessing you will be coming with me in November to see it. They're showing it at the Denver Symphony Orchestra is going to be playing the score while they show the movie.
I had no idea. I'd like to see that, because I've seen it in the theaters, but I've not seen it that way. That'd be cool.
Yes. Ethan, when did you see this in relative to other Hitchcock films?
Well, I was a big Vince Vaughn fan at the time, so
Oh man, if you were a student, you'd be getting F right
there
now.
There it is. I don't know. It is creative. You got it. You got to admit that. That's the place no one's expecting.
I think I saw it like four or five years ago.
Okay. So had you watched a lot of other Hitchcock before then, or?
I think I had like seen Vertigo and Rear Window before.
Okay.
Had you seen the remake first?
I've only seen bits of the remake on like TV.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay. That was well played, sir.
Man, more than anything you've said today, that just that seriously worked me up. But anyway.
There it is. I'm trying to remember even when I saw it in the grand scheme of things. I think I was just on a Hitchcock kick, and I'm like, I haven't seen Psycho. I need to see Psycho. So I went out and rented it and loved it.
Cool.
Because what I love about Hitchcock is that, okay, he does this more in his later films, but he does more with less in that he doesn't have to show all the gore and blood.
Right.
And that really is a tribute because it's still a very tension-filled film. And some of the effects, specifically when the detective meets his end.
Mm-hmm.
If that had been done in any other kind of movie outside of a Hitchcock film, I probably would have laughed at it because it was laughable how they pulled that thing off.
But for its time.
You know, it's still, even when you watch movies from that time, you're like, oh, come on. But it worked in this movie. And that's what I love about it. He's a master of making everything work no matter what. Yeah. He's like, you know, I don't care. I'm going to do this way, and it's going to work, and you're going to like it.
Yeah. The first time I saw it was 20 years ago. In fact, I have to look it up. It might be 20 years of the day, for all I know. I was in Florida with my grandmother, and it was the Sunday afternoon matinee movie on TV. And grandma turns to me, and she's like, "Have you seen Psycho?" My old grandma, and I'm like, "No." And she's like, "Oh, you haven't seen Psycho? Let's watch Psycho." And I don't know where everybody else was, but it was just my grandmother and I. It was no longer with us, unfortunately. Really,
I feel like there's more to this story, Barry.
Well, no, nothing interesting happened. I mean, you know, nothing weird or anything. It was just this really special experience because I'm watching it with her, and during the film. She would keep burying her head in my shoulders and like screaming and jumping, and it was so cool. Like I really like the movie. I thought was very disturbing and it definitely got under my skin. But I didn't think it was particularly scary. But I got to see it the way you would watch it in 1960, because that's how my grandmother was watching it. She really, really connected to it and was really frightened.
Remember
by
when
it.
She saw it originally?
Exactly, her it was like watching it fresh. It was really neat for me to get that experience. And I think I've watched it maybe once or twice every year since then, and it gets better every time I see it. I always notice things that that I haven't noticed before. Something really weird. If you look at the paintings in the bank where Marion Crane works. They actually give away the ending.
Really?
If you either you watch it on a screen that's big enough, or if you just hit the zoom button enough, look at the two paintings that are on the wall of the bank where Janet Leigh playing Marion Crane, where she works, and you'll notice. I'm not going to say what's in the paintings, but it pretty much gives away the ending, which is really interesting. I should say this movie's important because prior to Psycho, you could walk into a movie any freaking time you wanted. Like for example, if I wanted to see Old Dogs right now, I could go to my dollar theater down the street where it's playing at like 4:30 and 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock, you know, and I'd have to choose one of those. Back before Psycho, if that were the case, I could see Old Dogs whenever I wanted. I can go at the very beginning of the movie, I can go in the middle of it, I can go when there's only 5 minutes left, and I could sit through it and like watch another screening of it, you know. Going to the movies like didn't mean anything back in the day. It was literally just a form of escape. You can go anytime you wanted. Hitchcock said Psycho must be seen from the beginning to the end. He kind of he didn't steal that method, but he borrowed it from a French film called Diabolique, which did a very similar thing. So he made it so that American distributors, American theaters, in order to have Psycho in the theater, they had to go by this rule where people can only be let in at 4:30 or 6 o'clock or 8:30 or 10 o'clock. And it was a gimmick to see a movie from beginning to end. Imagine that. But that gimmick was so successful that because of that, now that is the way it has always been since 1960. You have to see a movie from beginning to end.
He kind of took a little bit of that from some William Castle goodness too, I think.
He definitely borrowed from that, but I mean, I think it was because of Diabolique, because Diabolique had a very similar thing. That movie, I think, came out like the year before or 2 years before. It also had an ending that was such a big twist that the director made it so in France you had to see it from beginning to end. So Hitchcock was like, well, I can do that too. So
those Frenchies can do it. Oh wait, no, he's British, so no, never mind.
It'd be interesting if Hitchcock talked like Foghorn Leghorn.
Those Frenchies could do it.
There you go. If you sound like Queen Elizabeth, there it is. You know, one of the most interesting things about this movie is the way that they, well, since we're talking spoilers here, you've already given the warning, spoiler warning again. the fact that they kill off Vivian Leigh so quick and so brutally.
That was a shocker. It's been done since, and no, it's never been anywhere near as effective. And of course,
executive decision.
Executive decision. No, you're right about that. That was effective. I mean, I think the thing that gave that away was in the poster. It says and Steven Seagal, but the movie itself, the opening credits actually say Kurt Russell and Steven Seagal. So they really, I think, that's a spoiler for that movie.
Deep Blue Sea.
Deep Blue Sea. That's another good one.
But not Samuel as good. Jackson. Not as good as Psycho.
Well, I mean, Psycho was the first. It was the first one to do that, where the lead character dies, and as the audience, you're sitting there going, "Oh my God, now what?" Like, who are we supposed to watch now? Oh, God, the guy who runs the motel, we're supposed to side with this guy? And you do, because Perkins' performance is so brilliant, and because Norman Bates is seemingly so sympathetic and sweet, and, you know, the mother is clearly set up to be the villain from the very beginning, you really do go, okay, this is, you know, we're rooting with Norman Bates now. In fact, you root for him when John Gavin, the boyfriend, shows up, because he's kind of a stiff, you know, in so many ways in that movie. So, I mean, you really are rooting for Norman Bates to escape from that house and overdo his mother. Then you discover really how screwed he really is.
Yeah. Yeah. Brought up. That's such an effective thing that they did. That tool is just really just to kind of get you hoping and hoping and holy.
Yeah. No, I think this is a perfect movie. I mean, Bernard Herrmann's score, I don't think has ever been topped. I really don't think so. And the cinematography, the choice of shooting in black and white, obviously Hitchcock did it because of the gore, and he wanted to, you know, have the film be seen in theaters and not unreleased. But I think the black and white gives it a real film noir look. I think there's something really universal about just the nightmare of driving at night in a dark and stormy night, and, you know, you have no choice but to turn off into this motel that, you know, with this dark house on the hill. I mean, it really does feel like an American nightmare, I think.
Yeah.
And considering what you discover about Norman Bates, I mean, this is about the bastardization of the American dream. It's dark stuff, but I think it's the best thriller. I really do.
And as we've mentioned, this isn't Hitchcock related, but you talk about, you know, Norman trying to escape the clutches of his mother in every way. I think a couple of the sequels actually kind of went into that pretty interestingly too.
Definitely. The fourth one is not my favorite, but it was written by Joseph Stefano, who wrote the screenplay for the first film, and it definitely ties itself in with the first film, the whole notion of how Norman Bates became who he was and trying to escape from that legacy and whatnot. I mean, Bates he's kind of an American Hamlet, this character.
Yeah. Very much so.
But yeah, did you... Because the second one is my favorite sequel. Did you...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep. That was a really... That looked like a worthy sequel.
It's a solid film. And it was directed by Richard Franklin, the Australian director, who's been called the Australian Hitchcock, so it was appropriate that he directed, and I think he did a fine job. The third one was directed by Anthony Perkins. It's not my favorite, but it's definitely... It's interesting.
Yeah, it's okay.
I don't think it's a bad movie at all. It's very, very interesting. And it's the first movie that Carter Burwell ever scored, you know, who went on to work for the Coen brothers. So it's got a really weird, quirky score to it. But I don't think the third one's not a great movie, but it's interesting. And if you like the Psycho films, you probably should see all four of them.
Yeah, yeah. So what's next on our list, sir?
North by Northwest. Hitchcock decided he wanted to make a James Bond movie, so he made North by Northwest, his James Bond film.
I wasn't a big fan of this one.
Why not?
I don't know.
What?
I just didn't connect with the film for some reason. I've tried watching it a couple of times, and I just couldn't care less about the characters. I don't know why.
I think it's the most entertaining movie I've ever seen, to be honest.
I'm not going to disagree with you. Why didn't you connect? You didn't like the Cary Grant character? Sorry. Sorry that Ethan and I are ganging up on you.
No. I'm definitely the minority on this, and I know it full well. But yeah, I love Cary Grant. It frustrated me to no end that I didn't like this movie, because I love just about everything that Cary Grant's ever done. But I just found him irritating for some reason.
Well, the thing I love about this movie is that his character is kind of a cipher, but he brings so much to the role, like so much charisma and wit and, like, you know, but oh well.
That's okay. No, you guys keep talking. I'm going to put the kibosh on it up front and then let you guys go ahead and bring it back up.
And if you didn't like the movie, that's okay.
No.
That's a refreshing perspective, because most people are mooting over this film like we are, but... No, I mean, when he's at the airport and, you know, like, and you're going, no, don't put your fingerprints on the knife, no. I mean, I think there's something universal about it. This guy is not smooth. He's clearly the everyman. He's clearly, you know, in over his head. He's kind of like how we would be in that situation, like, oh, God, what are we doing? And I don't know. I think there's something I think there's something terribly romantic about the idea of having to take a train ride with Eva Marie Saint. I think the cropped dust sequence is still one of the greatest. Just an incredible, incredible scene that looks so real every time I watch it.
Mount Rushmore.
James Mason is the bad guy. I mean, this film is just, to me, it's such a classic, and it really is, I think, a really great indication that Hitchcock would have been a wonderful James Bond director. I think he was really good with the villains in this. He was great with the action. He was good at giving the hero some dimension. I would have liked to have seen him make a Bond film.
Ethan?
Well, I there's nothing I can really say more. Barry said it perfectly. This is, like I said before, this is maybe the most entertaining movie I've ever seen.
And that's why we're kind of going down this road with Hitchcock. It was because, you know, we ran into this with Kurosawa. You know, what else can you say? So, well, let's talk about a bunch of movies. So,
well, I think another thing we could say about North by Northwest, I mean, I was mentioning before Bernard Herrmann's score for Psycho. Bernard Herrmann's score for this movie is so freaking exciting. For me, it's up there with John Williams' Indiana Jones March. You hear the music to North by Northwest, you want to run with a gun. It's just so dang exciting. I love the music to this. I remember they used the score to North by Northwest in the Who Framed Roger Rabbit trailer, and it made the movie look like an action film. I mean, the music to this is so exciting. There are so few films that have done this whole, an innocent man wronged on the run better than North by Northwest. I think it's the best of its kind. I think it's better than The Man Who Knew Too Much. I do like it better than The 39 Steps. I mean, Hitchcock has done this kind of film, obviously, many, many times. You know, the paranoia of the lead character on the run.
Well, it doesn't compare to Eagle Eye, but...
Well, no, when what film does?
Oh, wow.
But there you go. Yet another film that has borrowed or all out stolen from this movie, although... I'm not sure if the crop dust sequence of North by Northwest and the scene with the killer electricity and Eagle Eye are on even Steven there.
Why do I get the feeling we're going to be mentioning Shia LaBeouf at least one more time?
Oh, yeah, we probably will.
Okay.
All right.
What is next, sir?
Next, we're going to talk about Rear Window.
Wow, that was quick.
Well, before we get to the comparison, I'll say this much. This weekend, last weekend when I wasn't here, I was in Steamboat Springs with some friends, and we were actually in a condo with all these other apartments around. I thought, oh, God, there's a part of me that wants to get a binoculars because I swear, Rear Window understands the allure of voyeurism, I think, more than any movie about, stalking people on the internet or on the street. The notion that you could literally watch people in their window and literally have this invisible window into their life where you can see them, but they can't see you. I think this movie understands that visceral, dirty, secret thrill, and how that thrill could obviously become so poisonous and so addictive. Grace Kelly is freaking smoking in this movie.
Oh my gosh!
I think a lot of people don't understand how she was such a big deal. But then you see a movie like this, you get it. You get that she was an actress. She was sophisticated and sexy. She was a class act. She was not the girl next door. She was the girl. Who lived on a castle next to the girl next door. And James Stewart is wonderful in this film. I mean, he's great just about everything. It's hard to find a bad James Stewart performance, but I love his work in this. Raymond Burr as the bad guy, I think he's terrifying in this movie. It doesn't matter who I watch this movie with. Whenever I watch it with first-timers, they're always on the edge of the seat going, oh, God, no!
Especially when Grace Kelly's sneaking into the apartment.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's amazing. The suspense in this movie is so thick and so rich, and it still works. I mean, I think that's one of the best testimonies that Hitchcock's films still work, is that that people are still freaking out about them. They're still great.
Yes.
The only thing is, I'm not sure if I saw it or the Simpsons episode that spoofs it first. That's the only...
Well, as long as you saw it eventually.
And if the Simpsons spoof you, I mean, there are worse things in the world to have happen.
Yeah, you could have saw the Family Guy spoof. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow.
Well, let's see.
That's usually my place to make the Family Guy joke, but you took it and ran with it, sir. I'm proud of you.
No, I'm not a Family Guy fan.
So do we? We've dogged Disturbia enough. We don't need
well,
to.
Well, there's been a lot of other examples of this kind of thing. I mean, even The Burbs is a similar idea.
Absolutely. It's entertaining.
Yeah, Curtis Hanson, the guy who did L.A. Confidential and The River Wild. I think it was the first thing he ever directed. It was called The Bedroom Window with Steve Guttenberg. It was completely borrowed from this film. Hitchcock, Brian De Palma has stolen from Hitchcock so many times. You know, and stolen is probably a little harsh. He's borrowed from Hitchcock. He's paid homage to Hitchcock many
borrowed
times.
Borrowed liberally.
Yeah,
I think he kind of satirizes them in ways too.
Definitely, definitely. And I want to be respectful here because out of all the directors who have taken or borrowed or you know loaned imagery from Hitchcock, I certainly have the most respect for De Palma. The guy's a genius. And let's see, I'm trying to think which ones specifically. Taken from Rear Window.
Hi Mom takes the, I know you haven't seen that, but no, Hi Mom kind of takes the voyeurism thing. Sisters does a bit of the voyeurism thing.
That's right. Femme Fatale does.
The Palma one. Body Double. Also
Body Double, yes, especially Body Double. Yeah, I think that would be the big one there. But yeah, I mean, there's been so many films that have taken this premise and either done a pretty good job with it or made a tribute of it, or in the case of Disturbia, completely
bastardized it.
Yes, completely urinated all over it. So
that's a defecate.
No. Just had to get that out of the way.
Fair enough.
It's about 30% of the dialogue in that film.
Yes.
I hate that film so much.
If you took Rear Window and didn't make it scary at all, that's when you got Disturbia.
If you took Rear Window and tossed the screenplay and had R.L. Stein rewrite the screenplay, you'd have Disturbia.
Dang.
That's what it is. All right, let's move on.
Isn't that kind of an insult to R.L. Stein?
Yeah, it is. Sorry, Mr. Stein.
My parents met R.L. Stein in a mall once.
Oh, that's cool.
Food court. The food court of Mall of America. They met him.
Okay.
I don't even know what he looks like. Do they actually recognize him?
He kind of looks like a combination of Jerry Seinfeld and Harold Ramis.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I would, like, from the book he's written, I would imagine, like, a cross between, like, Clive Barker and John Waters. But your description is much better.
Wow.
That's cool that they actually met him. I don't know anybody who met R.L. Stein. Cool. 6 degrees, Dave. 6 degrees of separation from R.L. Stein. There it is. All right. All right. Well, the last one that we had planned to talk about today, and this one's a mixed bag for me, not because it's not a brilliant film, but because I hate the ending to it. And maybe you guys would completely disagree with me on this one. Vertigo.
I can see why you'd hit the ending.
I can't stand the ending to this movie. It feels like he didn't know how to end it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another Stewart classic.
It is a classic. Another brilliant score by Bernard Herrmann. Definitely one of the definitive movies about sexual obsession. Dark role for James Stewart. That's for sure. Really, really dark.
Especially when he finds her the lookalike.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it just starts getting into some creepy stuff.
Some unsettling stuff. Yeah, stuff that you would normally not even find in a movie made at this time, let alone a film by Alfred Hitchcock. But great use of San Francisco locales and the Salvador Dali designed dream sequence is pretty interesting.
Indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No question. You know, like most Hitchcock films, it's brilliant. And in terms of design, it's immaculate and it's a movie, I think, that works psychologically so much more than it does on the surface. And it's a movie you can't stop thinking about. But the ending, the last scene, which I won't give away, but it drives me nuts. It just feels like they didn't know how to end it. I can't stand that ending.
So we'll just end it abruptly.
It's abrupt. It feels like a bad joke. I don't know what they were thinking.
I mean, this is my favorite Hitchcock movie. And, in fact, it'd probably be in my top five films of all time. And the ending I love. I think it's incredibly powerful, and I think it is kind of ironic in a way, but that's part of what gives it its power. But oh well.
Well, and that's the best thing is, you know, even though not a fan of the ending necessarily, I don't mind the ending, but I can see where you're coming from on it. But it's still just such a great film otherwise that I mean
it is. No, it's you know, and you know, granted I haven't seen it in a long time, so I need to go back and look at it again, but yeah, I did definitely go with irony. The ending is definitely ironic. It just never felt right to me.
Fair enough. Now so that's it for this week, huh?
Well, those are four we mentioned. I mean,
do you want to like quickly mention any other ones?
I can't believe we haven't talked about The Birds. I mean The Birds is arguably scarier than Psycho. The Birds is like one of the great special effects movies. The special effects may be dated now, but I mean, for its time, I mean, this was one of the first like great big summer monster attack movies that was done on such a large scale and for an adult audience. Still terribly disturbing and violent. The scene where Jessica Tandy discovers, I think it's her husband, his eyes have been plucked out. Today, like, it's been re-rated PG-13 officially today, which is interesting. But yeah, this is a... I think The Birds is extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary. It begins like this really fluffy, almost like a Doris Day, Rock Hudson kind of movie.
Oh, absolutely.
And then, you know, once she gets to Bodega Bay and she's in the boat, all of a sudden, boom, we're in the middle of a horror film. This is a movie that's been borrowed, stolen from so many times. I mean, Shyamalan has all out admitted that, you know, Signs for him was like The Birds in a cornfield. So many filmmakers have taken from The Birds, and, you know, and there's all this talk about The Birds being remade.
I think that's officially dead.
I hope so. There was a TV movie sequel done. I think it was called The Birds 2 Land's End, and Tippi Hedren had a cameo in it. I think that is the kind of indication of not only was it dreadful, dreadful bad, but the kind of indication why they should never, ever do this again, because it once was enough. I think it's still a great film. It's still really scary. Yeah, I think this is one of the great, great Hitchcock films. It's such a strange film, and it has an ending that is downright apocalyptic. And
yeah,
and
it's almost a zombie movie near the end there. I mean,
really,
seriously.
Is. Yeah, it is. It is. No, I'd say The Birds is up there with his greatest. I mean, just incredible film.
Yeah, it's definitely unsettling. Especially if you're like going to be watching a nice spring day when you go out and the birds are chirping and happy and singing, and you're like, get the hell away from me.
You know, whenever I watch this movie and I step outside and I hear birds chirping, it always never fails to freak me out. So, do you like this film, Ethan?
I've actually never seen it.
Okay. Well,
list of shame.
That's okay. Well, I hope you do see it because I think you really like this one. Dave, you're a fan of Lifeboat, aren't you?
It's been so long since I watched it. Yeah. And I don't know, would that list as one of his lesser known films, though, among film fans?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Because most of the ones I don't want to talk about are going to be next week, because I'm a big fan of his lesser known works.
Okay. We'll be talking about, trying to think if there's anything else right now in his current list of films.
Rebecca?
Rebecca is the one Hitchcock film that won Best Picture.
Yeah.
I like Rebecca.
That's a disturbing movie, too.
It is.
It's incredibly good. Yeah, probably on the criterion of that one. Yeah.
Anybody who's ever had a relationship where you're the next one in line, where you're like the second wife or the second girlfriend or the new boyfriend, can relate to Rebecca. The whole notion that the whole movie, Rebecca's not even in the movie, but the whole film, all they're talking about, oh, she's no Rebecca, and this is the room where Rebecca lived. And Rebecca haunts this entire film, and it's got a great performance from Laurence Olivier.
Yes.
Really, really, really creepy ghost story. I really enjoy Rebecca. Great atmosphere. I don't think it's one of the must-see Hitchcock films, though. I don't think it's a great film, but I don't think it's one of his masterpieces. I really don't.
Yeah. Fair enough. Cool. Well, we'll save some for next week, and we want to get emails and voicemails from people, because, you know, we have voicemail again, so yeah.
Yes, please send us emails on voicemails, whatever, on any films that we did not mention that should have been mentioned, and any films that even the Hitchcockian homages or rip-offs or spin-offs or remakes that we should have mentioned.
Well, High Anxiety.
Anxiety is a good one.
Yeah.
I like High Anxiety.
Good stuff. Good stuff. That's all good. You know, we're a little bit over an hour and 15 minutes right now. So,
Yay. Yeah,
let's go ahead and wrap this up. But we'll be discussing his lesser known films. We won't reveal what they are quite yet. But we'll be tackling that next week. Let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting the theaters this coming week and weekend.
Yep. This coming Wednesday, the new collaboration from Jerry Bruckheimer, John Turteltaub, and Nicolas Cage. That would be The Sorcerer's Apprentice, also starring Monica Bellucci and Alfred Molina, who I hear steals the film. We'll get official word on that.
I would love to be able to tell you about that.
Poor Dave. He's like, I want to say something. And then on Friday, the long, much-anticipated, the movie that will hopefully save the summer, if not the year, Christopher Nolan's Inception, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Ken Watanabe, Michael
Ellen
Cage,
Page.
Marion Cotillard, Cade, who else is not
Ellen Page?
Ellen Page,
Joseph
Gordon-Levitt. I mean, amazing cast.
Yeah.
Let me guess the very worst reaction. Overrated. Too long. I didn't like the main character. I should have just seen Robin Hood again.
Wow. We'll find out tomorrow, won't we?
Yeah, I see it tomorrow morning.
I'm trying
tomorrow
to see
night.
I'm trying to get into that screening.
I hope you do, man. That'd be fun if you came with.
Yeah, It would make for a good time.
So yeah, those are, you know, Sorcerer's Apprentice. You know, I got to say this really quick. I'm really curious to see what's going to be number one next week, because Inception, on one hand, is going to have the best reviews, but Sorcerer's Apprentice opens on Wednesday. It's a quote unquote safer bet. It's shorter. It has more. It's more of a family friendly kind of movie. I mean,
I will say that they packed out 2 full theaters for the preview screening.
Wow.
And still had to turn people away. They didn't even have that many people show up for Toy Story.
Jeez.
Now, granted, the Toy Story theater was that one that's way up in the butt end of Denver,
okay,
by 470 and 70.
Yeah,
but still, this is freaking Toy Story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was shocked at how many people were there for that.
So I don't know. Cage might get it this weekend, even though Inception may be a better film. I don't know.
Yeah, we will see.
We'll see.
And what's hitting DVD next week, sir?
DVD next week, the aforementioned The Losers with Zoe Saldana and I can't think of his name, the guy who starred in Watchmen. Come on.
Dad from Supernatural?
Yeah, Dad from Supernatural.
Dad from Supernatural, all right. Poor guy, I can't think of his name.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Thank you.
See, I had to go to thinking about Supernatural to remember that. That's
there
the funny
go.
Part.
All right. I want to see this one. Kevin Smith's first non-Kevin Smith movie, Cop Out, with Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan.
I'm very curious to see it, just because it's him trying something new, and I can respect that. Yeah.
I've been wanting him to do that for a while, so I'm curious to see how that is. A movie I feel like we heard about all throughout spring, and then it finally came in theaters, and then it was gone. The Runaways, starring Kristen Stewart and Dakota Fanning, about the early days of Joan Jett. Yeah, like, I swear, like, this was, I couldn't stop hearing about this freaking movie. Then it finally opened up and it was gone.
It played for a week and it was gone.
Yeah, I didn't get the chance to see that one. One of Martin Scorsese's favorite, if not his all-time favorite movie, Michael Powell's The Red Shoes, available on Blu-ray.
And DVD Criterion, which, hey, that sale I was telling you about, Barnes & Noble, it's going for like 3 weeks. So nice. If you want to pick it up, brand spanking new for half price.
Very good. Very good. Galaxy of Terror, the Roger Corman cult classics collection. Galaxy of Terror is actually on the list of worst movies ever made on that documentary you told me to see, the 50 worst movies ever made. Yeah, it's actually on that list. And I'll get to that in a second. Galaxy of Terror, finally available on DVD.
This is the Forbidden World, which probably isn't held in much higher regard.
Not at all. Yeah, Forbidden World also. So from the Roger Corman's cult classics DVD collection. So try saying that fast 5 times. Black Narcissus. I've actually seen this one. Or Black Narcissus. I never say it right. This is the Deborah Carr film about the nun who goes to the nunnery that's way up on the hill. I always remember the scary parts of this movie.
I've never seen it.
It's pretty disturbing. There's this subplot about an evil nun who like tries to kill Deborah Carr. That always... This movie really spooked me out. Like, it starts off kind of like The Sound of Music, like with a more of a exotic flavor, and then it gets really, really dark. It's a great film, but it's creepy.
Cool.
Tin Man, this not the Barry Levinson film, but the sequel to The Wizard of Oz, or is it a prequel?
Yeah, no, it's a sequel.
It is a sequel. Yeah. So it'll be a sequel to Return of Oz, too. The Sci-Fi Channel movie with Richard Dreyfuss, available on Blu-ray. Yes. Mother, the new film from Bong Joon-ho, the director of The Host. I've heard this is really good.
Cool.
So, and then finally, Being Human Season 1. I got to ask you what this is, because I always think it's the movie with Robin Williams. What is Being
this
Human?
This is a British series. It's only like 6 or 7 episodes, but it's about a ghost, a vampire, and a werewolf who all share a flat. And it's not a comedy. It's actually played pretty straight-laced, and it is very well done.
And it actually works.
Yeah, it works very well. It gets pretty dark and disturbing, but yeah, it's good.
Man.
Yeah,
because it sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like a parody.
So you watched that 50 Worst Movies thing, huh?
I did. I want to mention this really quick, because I watched it, and as I did, I wrote down all the titles, because I was curious how many of them, like,
I want to see the Kung Fu, the amputee Kung Fu Master movie.
Yeah. Well, here are the ones, this is a film documentary that's available on Netflix since I'd watched. It's called 50 Worst Movies Ever Made. Dave told me to check this out.
You probably don't need to watch it, honestly. Honestly, what drove me up the wall was the fact that they used the same graphic every single time they went from movie to movie.
It did feel like a pretty cheap film, and they didn't have a lot of modern films either.
No.
But they did. They kind of went off some easy targets. Here are the ones you might have heard of from the last 20 years. Troll, the film with Sonny
Bono. But not Troll 2.
Yeah, not Troll 2, but Troll. Ishtar, which is such an easy target. Howard the Duck, also an easy target. Not an unwatchable film by any means. Let's see. Firebird, 2015 AD. Never heard of that one. Smokey and the Bandit 3, which is a terrible movie, but I don't know if it's one of the worst films ever made. Xanadu, terrible movie. Again, not one of the worst movies ever made. Leonard Part 6, yes.
That
belonged in the list.
I was cheering.
Yeah,
that
Leonard
one
Part
on,
6
yeah.
came in at number 25. What else we got here? Galaxy of Terror, number 22. So that's pretty high up there. What else we got? Crippled Masters. That's the one Dave talked about. Number 12.
Tell me when you watched that, you weren't like immediately oddly intrigued.
I gotta say, I've never seen an amputee kung fu movie. So it just shows that there are movies for everyone, really.
Yes.
Sorceress, number 11, that came out in 1983. Never saw that one. Bloodsucking Freaks, infamous movie from the 19, I think like late 60s, early 70s. That came in at number 9. What else we got? Plan 9 from Outer Space, you all know. Number 4. Number 3 was The Thing with Two Heads. Number 2 was EGA, which Mystery Science Theater did a beautiful job of parodying. And number 1 was The Incredibly Strange Creatures from 1961.
It was, honestly, I wasn't that impressed with the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it
looked like, what can we get the rights to actually use?
Exactly. I mean, they should have made Leonard Part 6 number 1. I mean, it's just such an easy target, an obviously terrible, cheap monster movie. But yeah, the rest, it really wasn't that. Black Belt Jones is on the list. That's a good movie.
That looks good.
That's
like,
actually a really good
that.
Movie. Yeah, I mean, there are a few good ones on there. Glenn and Glenda deserves to be on any list. Bride of the Monster, not the worst Ed Wood movie, definitely up there. I'll end it there. But anyway, yeah, it was an intriguing documentary to see what they chose, but,
It seemed more like it was like, well, what have we got rights to and what's going to be easier to grab?
Right, but, like any top 50 list, of course there's going to be agreements and disagreements, so.
Yeah, it looks like they kind of half-assed it, honestly.
So we have voicemail, right?
No. We have a voicemail number.
Oh.
We have no correspondence as of yet, but that's okay. If you want to shoot us an email, by all means do shoot us an email at podcast@barryethanordave, @screengeeks.com. Or you can give us a call. I didn't get the sound clip done yet. I'm sorry, guys. Give us a call at 719-358-2675. That's right, our number, 719-358-BORK.
And we'll play your message on our 121st episode.
There it is. Totally, totally. We'll be back doing some more Hitchcock goodness next week. But until then, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
Take care.
Wow. The interesting thing about that is...